Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the Smashy Business Show. I am Wadid Ahmed.
And I'm Abdul Majid.
And today's Thursday. It is the 26th of December, and the week is almost done. We're almost there, and I'm so excited.
One festivity is over, and the second one starts with New Year. So, yeah, everyone is preparing for that. And let's see what's up in the business world. How was your day yesterday, by the way?
My day yesterday?
What did you do? Did you do anything special?
What happened yesterday?
Christmas.
Oh, yes. Sorry. I'm already on to the new day. But yesterday, actually, so we got to leave at like 1 p.m. yesterday. So that was really nice. Honestly, I went on a walk.
Oh, nice.
I know it's so random, but this is something I really like, Majid. And I've been saying it to the people here. I've been wanting to just like at 1 p.m., 3 p.m., get off the desk and like go ride a bike or walk. So the second I got home, I looked at the weather. The weather was so nice. And so I was like, I will never get to walk in Dubai when there's no sun.
Yeah.
You know, so I went on a really nice walk, but I saw something that really concerned me though. I saw this really big truck. It was driving really quickly.
Oh.
And then I saw a mini truck, like, you know, those kid car trucks. And I saw these like two girls in it. The truck driver did not even see them. Didn't see them. You know, I had to like stand in the street and glare at him and be like, excuse me, like slow down.
So, yeah, sometimes there's rash driving.
When I was taking classes,
I witnessed that a lot. But I guess they're in a rush to reach somewhere.
I know, but there's kids
yeah,
on
but
the
you
road.
Have to take care.
And I think what drew the contrast more for me was the fact that those girls, they were like in those like Toy Story cars. Where it's a truck, but it's a mini truck. And then that giant truck just approaching like their doom. I got so afraid. I just stood in front of them and I'm like, excuse me, like slow down. But like, you know, if you drive a truck.
Most probably he's getting a fine. Even without us knowing.
No, but it was like more of a community, so nobody would have
even... installed cameras everywhere. You can't even think that you're maybe inside a community. Because recently where I live in Discovery Gardens, there was a lot of noise about people doing rash stuff on the roads with their cars because there were no cameras there. It's a very silent, very nice neighborhood. Mm. There's no shops around, no nothing. There's only residential places. So a lot of people were talking about it on groups, Facebook groups, and here and there. Mm. And see how proactive the government is. We randomly started seeing Dubai police cars there. Now people are getting fined in the streets for overspeeding and everything. So they saw a problem and they were like, okay, this area needs proper monitoring because people know now that there's no cameras or anyone. Mm. So they started monitoring properly. And I've seen a difference in the way people are driving now. I've seen a difference that they're stopping at the dotted line for 1 or 2 seconds and then turning. They're stopping at the white line, which there's a stop sign. So that's a good thing that they don't wait for something bad to happen. They did put in place preventive measures as soon as they started hearing chatter about anything wrong happening. So most probably, even with the trucks, there's timings. Mm. Big trucks can't be on main roads before 6:30, 7:30.
No, it's so wrong. And you're right. These things are in place because even, by the way, like I know this now. You know how there's a... I know what it's called in Arabic, but I don't know what it's called in English. Because when we use the term, we only... Radar? You know the thing?
Oh.
Radar?
Yeah, radar.
Do they call it? What? That's
it's
so simple.
It's
just, I think, because of the fact that we always say in Arabic and we don't discuss cars in English. But point is that it doesn't just catch if you're speeding anymore.
Yeah.
If you don't have the seatbelt on,
it's
crazy. Like when I'm sometimes like searching for like a ring or a necklace that fell and I want to take the seatbelt off, my cousin gets really angry at me. He's like, do not take your seatbelt off. But just
especially if you're sitting in the front seat.
Yeah. But just to be honest with you, on my evening, Majid, I had this really deep conversation with my sister that honestly you triggered. And it was this topic of media literacy.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I'm always giving my thoughts to Majid. And Majid is like, Ward, like not everyone thinks this way. people aren't able to deep these things. And actually what we spoke about, it was the, once again, it was the Blake Lively and Justin Baldoni case that's currently ongoing in the media. Essentially, what's going on is that these two, they filmed a very famous movie together, It Ends With Us. It was inspired by a book, which a lot of people loved, by Colleen Hoover. And what essentially happened is that after the movie was released, a lot of people thought that Blake Lively's response was very insensitive, even when she was doing the interview. But really, the campaign, they planned it to be lighthearted. They didn't want it to revolve around the issue. And so what happened is there was this entire campaign against her. By the way, I was a part of this campaign. The internet rose against her, and I was like, okay, I don't like Blake Lively. But now we find out that it was a very intentional smear campaign, because she is suing Baldoni.
Yeah.
But what was so interesting about the entire thing is that bringing me back to this point of media literacy, I saw something that Baldoni has hired the lawyer for the who has helped the Menendez brothers reapply for their appeal.
Yeah.
And when I looked at that, I found it so interesting, and I looked at my sister and I was like, oh, he is definitely guilty. He is definitely guilty, because why would he hire such a good defense lawyer who defended two people for murder? And then my sister looked at me, imagine, and you know what she said? She went like, Ward, this is how you know people don't have media literacy. Look at what they're saying in the comment section. Yeah. The twins were innocent, so Justin has to be innocent. So do you see the way that people read things? And the message that it really makes me want to put out is that be careful of what you read.
Yeah.
Always try to look for the hidden truth. I find that often with the hidden truth, Majid, it's either hidden or it's right there in plain sight.
But you
there
don't
is
see
no
it.
Between. There is never, ever any between. But there's no between.
The idea of media literacy, if you want a crash course on it, I love this YouTube channel. It's called Crash Course. And it's by two brothers. One of them is a very famous author. Completely forgot the book. But Crash Course is run by two of the brothers. I remember talking about this with him as well.
Oh, I used to watch Crash Course.
Yeah,
Crash Course. They have really
a whole
good
course on media literacy. It's like 7 or 8 videos, 10 minutes each. It's a very nice course. But I studied it in university, and I loved the course. The idea is there's so many kinds of things that people do to make something more interesting if it's boring. So you have to be very observant of the fact whatever you're reading is being presented to you with an agenda. That's the main highlight of the whole course that you can see on Crash Course. It's a very famous YouTube channel. The idea is whoever is giving you the news has an agenda. It can be as innocent as getting you to follow the account, or it can be as evil as trying to brainwash you into believing in an idea. So you have to understand it. So that is why media literacy in this age where there's so much media around us, and I never understood that even the wrapper, this was news to me, that even the wrapper of a chocolate or a biscuit is actually media as well. You need to have media literacy to understand what is there, how the colors that they're using on the wrapper are affecting you, how when you hear a fizzy cola opening sound, you get this flavor in your mouth and brain.
It is so satisfying. It is so satisfying. I love it.
All of this is media, because sound is also a part of media. So that opening of, it's like training you. Whenever you hear that sound, you want to drink a fizzy cola or
anything.
You
know, that's why I have such a, I think that's why, especially now that I've come here, I have such a respect for editors. Because Majid, I used to be one of those people who thought that editing was such like a muck-up job.
Yeah.
Like it's so
just
easy.
Just fix the grammar.
It's
in.
So
that's
simple.
It.
Like it won't take that much time. But, you know, like being here and seeing the way that Cairo and Akash work, they're really lovely video editors. Yeah. I realized how specific and how intentional everything is.
Yeah.
Everything is so specific. And even when I'm editing, I'm always thinking about what's something that would immediately catch your attention.
Yeah.
So everything is done with a purpose, and you need to be aware that it is done with that purpose.
Yeah.
A person did not just wake up and put something out for no absolute reason.
You just have to understand that purpose. If it's an innocent purpose, like they want you to follow their account, or if they want more engagement in an innocent sense, then it's fine. But yeah, if there is an evil plot behind it, just try to avoid
it. Not evil, but there's a plot.
Not evil, but there is always a plot. So media literacy is all about understanding that plot. And how would you do it? That's on you. That's your own research. The amount of good stuff that you read will help you understand that.
I think just whatever you read. General. You know, I once spoke to the head of English that we had back in school. And, you know, I told him, I was like, you know, what's the one tip you'd have for people who want to improve? I wasn't asking for myself, but I was just generally curious because he had a lot of years of experience. And you know what he said, Majid? He said that the one thing I try to tell everyone is just read. It doesn't matter what you're reading. You could be reading cartoons. You can be reading anything. It doesn't even have to be some big-sized mega book. It just has to be some sort of reading. You will develop your own sense and your own thoughts and your own perceptions and have the ability to make your, to come up with your own implications from things. So just read. It can be anything. It doesn't need to be big
books. Talked about history, right? So I told you, I remember that. I love the historians who read like multiple pieces of work and then come up with a conclusion. That's the exact same thing that you should also use. For example, if you're reading about, again, history. If you want to read about history of the UAE, find an author who is UAE, a local, and he's written a book. Then find an author, for example, if UAE had historically bad relations with a country, find an author from that country. And then find a third person who is from Europe or Americas who has no relation. You take three perspectives, a local perspective, an opposing perspective, and a third person perspective.
It always works.
And then in your brain, you can come up with one final, your own thought. So this is how you read stuff. That is how I like. If I read any story, and even in journalism, whenever you listen to a story and the story is very one-sided, for example, Blake Lively case, if you only read Blake Lively's statement, there is like 90% chance you'll agree with her because you keep reading her part of the story.
But in
read
this
the other
case,
part of the story.
But in this specific case, Majid, I feel like I'm seeing the same thing that happened to Amber Heard.
Yeah.
Do you remember the entire Johnny Depp and Amber Heard case? And I think this their cases, you know what they really go back to? I feel like people who are watching the media, they want the perfect victim. They want the perfect victim. And to them, Blake Lively is not the perfect victim, and she's not the perfect victim because, by the way, her and her husband, they got married in a plantation. So a plantation where there was previously a slave master and slaves, they got married there. Even all of her interviews, her interactions, they don't exactly paint her in a positive light. However, when you do read the report, there is a sense of truth there. I think people are looking for the perfect victim in her, someone who's just completely innocent and has done nothing wrong, but there might be a sense of truth in what happened. And I think, by the way, I think that's why people are so impressed with Mangione. He seems like the perfect victim. He was valedictorian, he graduated, comes from a very wealthy family, mildly good-looking. So to people, this is like, oh man, this
he was
is
also sick. So he was also sick. He was
perfect.
He
victim.
Had a reason. Yeah,
it's the perfect victim.
What
people
I've realized is that people, media specifically, and movies and series. What I've seen is that there's a lot of black and white that goes on in movies and series. Now it's changing. To be honest, you look at media again. Coming back to media literacy, I don't know why, but it's a good topic that we're discussing because we are a media company, and everyone should know what media literacy is because we also put out content. We also have an agenda that we want to give good stories to people. It's the simplest of agendas that we have, that we want to keep everyone updated about the startup scene, the entrepreneurship scene, the business scene in the Middle East. That's our agenda. We're very clear about it. So in movies and series, you'll see always a black and white. There'll be a hero who'll be perfect in his relationship, in his life, in everything. He'll be the greatest, whitest guy possible. And the evil guy, the villain, the opposition, he will always be a bad guy. He'll be bad with his dog. He'll be bad with his son or daughter. He'll be bad with his wife, parents, everyone. But in real life, you have people with darker shades of gray. That's the best theory I've ever learned in my life. I always use it.
Yeah.
So some person can be a darker shade of gray, more towards the bad side, but they will always have this one good side about them. So that is the spectrum that we need to judge people, judge stories, judge everything on. Every story has two sides. One side is a lighter shade of gray and one side is a darker shade of gray. Don't always judge people in black and white. That if this guy is doing
it's
one
a
thing
bad
wrong,
perspective to have.
Yeah, if this person, I saw him doing one bad thing once, this guy is evil throughout his life. No, maybe that one thing he's doing, but there's like 99 other things that he's doing good.
And there's
so,
yeah, a
we need to create
it.
That kind of perspective in world, in life, about people, about everything.
So, and just bringing things back to perspective, back to business perspectives, for our first topic for today, Mubadala, the investment company that is based in Bulabi, has announced the acquisition of an 80% stake in Global Medical Supply Chain and Al Ittihad Drugstore from Global Alone Healthcare Holding, with GHH retaining the remaining 20% stake. Yeah. So this strategic acquisition boosts Mubadala's footprint in the healthcare, logistics, and pharmaceutical distribution sectors. Moreover, it really aligns with the UAE's vision to establish a robust local life sciences infrastructure. Now, I'm going to tell you what Ismail Ali Abdullah, Executive Director of UAE Clusters at Mubadala's UAE Investments Platform, said. He said that the expanding pharmaceutical market drives an increasing demand for specialized and efficient drug logistics solutions. By integrating GMCS and IDS into our portfolio, we are poised to create a vertically integrated life sciences sector in the UAE and enable its potential to encompass the entire value chain from logistics and distribution to specialized manufacturing.
Yeah.
Now, when you know this, when we take a look at this story, the reason why this in itself is so significant, it's because healthcare is very expensive.
Yeah.
And to have such a large sovereign wealth fund backing it, that's only going to make the healthcare industry even better than it already is.
Whenever any investor joins a company, there's always like there's always naysayers who are like, no, they will come and they'll make this difficult, that difficult. What I've seen is, if I am putting my money, if Mubadala is putting their money into something, they'll always make the systems more efficient. Obviously, that means, like Elon Musk's, as soon as he joined, he fired like I don't know how many people, thousands of people, because he said that, oh, they're not contributing anything. So likewise, whenever investment comes from these funds, there is somewhat like a shedding of people, like, oh, this person, no need, not doing anything, not contributing anything. So that is there, but it's more about efficiency, making processes easier, quicker, and more like attractive to people. So them investing in health is a very good sign. I remember I just opened it again. The very first time I came across Mubadala, I was like, let's find out what they are. You only look at their investments in the UAE and you're like, okay, this is like, and it is one of the biggest three or four funds in the Abu Dhabi, not even the UAE, in Abu Dhabi. And we recently did the story that Abu Dhabi became the financial capital of
It's the richest city in the world.
Yeah. So ADIA, Abu Dhabi Investment Authority, is the biggest. They are a $1 trillion fund now, officially. We just did a story like 2-3 days ago. And after that, there's Mubadala and ADQ. So Mubadala, just a highlight of their investments in UAE only. They have invested in Tabreed, sustainable cooling. We need cooling a lot in the UAE. Mubadala Energy, Al Maria Island, that's the Galleria Mall, all of them, they've invested in it. They have invested in Four Seasons. They haven't left anything, trust me.
And I even believe they
Hub 71 also, sorry, I completely forgot, the startup center.
You remember Mubadala had something with Microsoft? I don't remember what it specifically was.
Not Mubadala, G42. Basically, G42 has Mubadala as an investor.
Yeah.
And Microsoft invested $1.5
billion. So they're involved in everything.
So Rosewood, Active, Zayed Sports City, Zayed University, they have invested in. Dolphin Energy, these are the like Cleveland Clinic, Abu Dhabi, Space 42, G42, Al Dar, which is one of the biggest real estate firms in the UAE and in Abu Dhabi also.
And so Al Dar is in collaboration with the Trump Organization.
First Abu Dhabi Bank. I just keep looking at this list and I realize that they have so much investment in so many things. And you look at those products then and you realize that those products are not small. First Abu Dhabi Bank is the biggest bank in the UAE in terms of assets that they manage. Abu Dhabi ADCB, Abu Dhabi Central Bank is the biggest bank for something else. Like there's categories in which they're the biggest. Masdar City, it's a renewable city. It's a little on the down low. They wanted to create a sustainable, 100% sustainable city. No electricity, oil use, all from solar panels, wind energy.
I'd love to see that.
Yeah.
I'd love to see how that's going to look.
I went there, like I crossed there and I saw it like from the outside. It looks beautiful.
Is it called the sustainable city?
It's called Masdar City.
Oh, So you know, there's actually somewhere, it's near Town Square in Ashama.
There's a sustainable city also.
Yes, it's called, it's beautiful, by the way. From
I remember
the inside,
them.
It's amazing.
Yeah, I remember them because we, when I was working with an events company, we used to do international property show, and they were one of our sponsors. And for that reason, I went a lot deep into them, like, what are they doing? And it's by some other real estate holding. And that sustainable city is so beautiful. Mm. They have parking spaces and they have solar panels over the parking spaces. Mm. So they created a whole area. They grow their own food. They grow their own groceries. Their town events are so nice. So it's a whole community that they've created in that sustainable city. Mm. So it was by YITI, YITI, the sustainable city by YITI. So yeah. A lot of things are happening.
Of course. And just on the mention of all things sustainable, this is exactly what our topic is about today. So the UAE has introduced new measures to enforce price controls on 9 staple food items. So their prices are going to stay the same. It's going to include cooking oil, eggs, dairy, and rice starting from January to 2025. Now, under these new rules, prices can only be raised with approval from the Ministry of Economy, and a task force will oversee enforcement. The regulations aim to protect consumers from price hikes driven by unforeseen circumstances. And when we say unforeseen circumstances, that could obviously be the thousands of people that are moving to the UAE. That in itself, that increases demand.
One unforeseen circumstance, sorry to cut you off, was recently that India stopped exporting their rice to other countries because they were facing a deficit in the production. So they wanted to feed their people first.
Yeah.
And we saw that rice prices in the
UAE.
We can't
blame them for that.
Yeah, it was a very normal move by any country. They stopped exporting anything which doesn't go into surplus. Every country has a policy that they want this much amount for their country and then the surplus they export. So India is one of the biggest countries from where we import rice. Recently, India faced a lot of problems because of flooding and there's 100 things. But what happened was that UAE faced a shortage, but they found another country, like they always have other options to export rice from. So the prices raised around 4 or 5 dirhams on all rice products. But then as soon as India started trade again, the Indian rice came again and the prices were normalized. That is the good part that, for example, if you get a 5 kg bag for 40 dirhams, when India's rice stopped coming, prices went up to 45, 44, depending on the per people. But as soon as Indian rice came back, the prices went down to 40. This regulation is very important because usually when you see a price hike, it doesn't go down. It stays at 45.
But you know, Majid, just like reverting the topic back to that human aspect.
Yeah.
When I see something like this, I'm seeing a nation that is accommodating for all the classes that exist within its country.
Yeah.
Yes, we always tell you guys that there are ultra high net worth individuals in this country.
Yeah.
Of course there is, but there are also people who are struggling to purchase their necessities.
Yeah.
Just very recently, I saw something and it was on Facebook. I read it and it was this mother who, she was asking for help because she had just given birth and she had just lost her job after her paternity leave. And these things, they do happen here. There are certain people who are struggling. There, by the way, a lot of the refugees from the Ukrainian crisis, from Sudan, from Syria, all of them did come to the UAE.
Yeah.
And the UAE was very welcoming. Like, you know, Majid, there was something actually, I wish I could remember the name of the organization, but it was a very large food bank. And you know what they were doing? Basically, number one, you had to sign up for it. And I know a lot of my family members who did. And they actually gave them really big boxes that were filled with sugar, flour, and like a bunch of different beans. And they actually, they also got a 200 dirham Lulu card, gift card. Yeah, so, and it was for every single one of them. And it's you know, they are very supportive in that sense because a lot, there are people who do struggle to get their daily necessities of eggs and dairy so that they're keeping the prices the same. That is so good. That is so good for people who, these things for them are their main foods. There are people who do eat eggs for lunch.
Yeah.
You know, they don't have anything else. So that these prices get to stay the same for them. I remember, you know, there was this one time I was at Spinney's and I was just shopping. I love Spinneys. And I noticed that a lot of people love Spinneys. They love going to Spinneys to get their like ready meals. And yeah. their ready meals, what makes them even better is that they're healthy. Yeah. They're healthy meals. Their salad section, their grilled chicken. But beside the point, I remember when I was at Spinneys, I saw this delivery driver. And I believe he was buying lunch. And, you know, we were paying beside each other. And I looked at what he was buying. It was around lunchtime. I was buying my lunch too. And do you know what his lunch was, Majid? You know the Arabic bread?
Yeah.
The mini pieces of bread. It was that and fresh Al-Mara'i yogurt.
Yeah.
Because there are I love it too. It is a nice combination. Bread with like yogurt or rice with yogurt. It's really good. But it's like that's something I eat when I'm craving. That is actually what he eats for lunch.
Yeah.
And I notice that a lot of them do this. I see it. So that these things get to stay the same for them. That no, really, it is something that makes me really emotional and really happy because
And the business side of it as well, there is a bakala that recently opened near my house. So Discovery Gardens, as I told you, is a very residential area. There's no shops around.
Yeah.
You either go to the pavilions that are there or you go to the main shops and they're far, so you have to walk. But they opened a bakala near my house. There's a mosque right in front. So they opened a bakala there. And I went there and I started talking to the guy again, that business intrigue that, oh, what's the like budget? How much do you spend on the shop? How much did you pay and all that? The main thing, the main takeaway from his story was that UAE government has fixed a profit margin for them and they earn good. So it's not that the UAE government tells you to open a bakala, get a license and all the things sorted. And they'll be like, no, if something is at a retail price of 10, sorry, a wholesale price of 10, sell it for 10. Because then you won't make any profit. So they've given a percentage to all the bakalas and all these stores that you can have 2 to 3%. I don't remember the exact percentage because he didn't tell me. He just said there is a fixed percentage. So he can sell it for 10.5 and he can sell it for 11 or 12 as well. So that's the good part. The UAE government promises you a profit over it. They have given you the higher limit that you can go at max till this because, again, they bought it in wholesale and then brought it. So the price of convenience that you can get it near your house. So it's a good thing that every business in this grocery area, the UAE government allows you to get profit. So you don't need to go extravagant on over 5 or 10%. They promise you everything. So that's the good part about them as well, putting in place a policy where a bakala owner can and will make profit. And then now them putting a stricter regulation that you can't increase the prices by yourself just randomly. You have to take approvals. So
yes.
Good for the people.
It
again,
is, it is.
And always about the people, to be honest.
And speaking of the people, Abu Dhabi's tourism sector has expanded rapidly, adding about 37,000 jobs for all new expats and people in 2024, boosting the total number of jobs in the industry to 225,000. Now, the Emirates' tourism sector is projected to contribute nearly $15 billion to its GDP this year with a target of over $24 billion by 2030. Now, when I'm taking a look at this topic, I was just telling, I was just talking to Richard about this just a moment ago. We were saying, there are so many people. There are so many people everywhere, every single place in the country. It's so crowded now, whether it's Global Village, whether it's a rest, everything. Everything is so crowded. And it's because of how many people are moving to the country.
Yeah.
And Abu Dhabi's tourism sector, it's accommodating for that. And they're doing that by adding specifically 37,000 jobs. That is a very big number.
The main thing is Abu Dhabi has everything now that Dubai was always promised to have. Abu Dhabi, I recently went for a holiday there for 2 days. But I went to SeaWorld and stayed in the hotel. But there's so many things.
I still can't wait to go.
Yeah, there's so many things that you can do in Abu Dhabi now. And the better part for me in Abu Dhabi is it's all like very concentrated on the Yas Island. So there's things to do in the city as well, Abu Dhabi, the main city. But there's so much stuff that happens outside of the city. So the crowd control is there. You won't see the Abu Dhabi, the main city streets crowded because, oh, there's some event happening. Like, for example, DWDC, anything happens, the whole Sheikh Zayed is flooded with cars and people coming. So that's the good part about Abu Dhabi. It's so well planned. And even as they're expanding their entertainment avenues, they're adding stuff, they're taking it, keeping it, trying to keep it a little away from the city. The concerts that happened, the Coldplay concert, that's away from the city.
I am so excited. Yeah, everyone it's is coming so excited. Up.
Yeah, the ticketing
thing. Are you
going?
Are you going?
No, most probably. Really? I don't like Coldplay. I don't like concerts in general. I hate the crowd and all that thing.
I've never gone to a concert before.
No, I would like prefer never. A Qawwali over a concert every day. I'm very desi type of guy in terms of concerts. But they're moving everything away from the city, not because, that's easy or the land is cheaper. It's just that it's a very good idea to keep the entertainment concentrated in one place. So all the tourists, all the people who want to come here, experience Abu Dhabi for everything, they can go to the city, they can walk around the streets. But they would rather be in one place, enjoy everything there.
Yeah.
Also, there's a complex of 7 hotels. Completely forgot their name, but there's a complex in on Yas Island of 7 hotels. All of them are different brands, but soon that whole complex will come under one company and they'll make it a resort of a kind. So development-wise, they know they're expecting more people. Main important part, you know, this fair is coming to Abu Dhabi. Mm. So this number is not going to come down. It's going to like astronomically increase because Abu Dhabi has figured out the secret formula.
They're adding more and more stuff. They've known the secret formula. I feel that we haven't known that they've known or that it was even there. But with that being said, thank you so much for watching, everyone. This is Smashy Business Show, a Smashy Business production under the Augustus Media Podcast Network. You can find our newsletter on Smashy TV, and you can also find us, as always, on Instagram, X, LinkedIn, and YouTube. Thank you.